You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The NFL playoffs are here. Watch every game of the postseason for free with the Yahoo Sports app or the official app of the NFL on your phone or tablet. Plus, get all your latest breaking news, highlights, and more. Download the NFL app or the Yahoo Sports app in your app store or at nfl.com/mobile today. Certain restrictions and data rates may apply.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. DJ and Bucky with you. I am in Florida for the East-West Shrine Game. Bucky is got the call for the NFLPA game in Los Angeles. So, taking a look at some of those prospects, which we can dig into probably a little bit later time, Buck. But, man, we've got to discuss what we saw in the national championship game last night.
A lot of talent on display in the national championship game. Both teams are loaded with NFL caliber players, from the quarterback positions to some of the guys that we saw at the skill positions, particularly at wide receiver, to even some of the defensive guys that stepped up and made some splash plays. There's a lot of talent on display. It's one of those things that would be must-see TV for scouts and evaluators.
Yeah, we'll get to that in detail. We also have the Final Four. We've got the Final Four, the championship games coming up this coming weekend. We'll touch on what's made those teams so successful this year, not only just looking at the quarterbacks there, Buck, but kind of running them through our formula. We talked about on the Move the Sticks podcast last year, what is the championship formula? What's the foundation of a championship team? And we came up with a list of 12 players at different positions and different roles you need to be a championship caliber team. So we'll kind of run all four of those teams through that car wash, see what it looks like in a little bit. But I do want to start there. Biggest takeaway watching that game last night, because I had my tape out. You know, I've got my top 50 list coming out next week, Buck. I've got to pump out a mock draft. I think we'll be out Friday. So I'm trying to do some work and watch games in the background. And this one, I said, you know what? Screw it. I'm just going to sit down and take in this championship game, because there was so many NFL guys to watch. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun to watch that game. That game kind of played out in the way that we thought it would be. We thought it would be a shootout. We thought guys would have an opportunity to kind of make some plays. And, I mean, there were a lot of plays to be made. I think you have to be impressed with what Clemson was able to do very early in the game. Their playmakers, their experience, T. Higgins kind of showed up and showed out pretty early. And then when LSU settled in, everyone will talk about Joe Burrow, and Joe Burrow was terrific. But I think that game did. It really put a spotlight on the playmakers that he had around him. Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, those two guys dominated the game. Thaddeus Moss made some plays. But what you saw, like elite premier pass catchers dominating the game on the outside. And, you know, I think part of the reason why LSU was able to roll through their schedule is because they were doing things that are very, very unique to what they do, particularly in the conference where they played it. They had an accumulation of outstanding blue chip talent on the outside. They had the perfect point guard in Joe Burrow, and they basically spread and shred teams in a way that we hadn't seen. I've never seen so much empty five wide formations from a team that kind of fancies himself as a physical team, but LSU puts their athletes in space and they just kind of test and see if you can hold up. And most teams have, no team has been able to hold up. And we saw that kind of take place again.
It's funny, you know, watch college football right now and you see some of the same things. I would say probably 8 years ago, maybe 8, 10 years ago, Buck, we saw the bubble screen craze, right? And then I feel like now it is slants and verticals from the slot. Like that is college offense right now. And it is 101. And you basically just decide kind of what leverage you get. You want to give them those slants. They're going to take it all day long. They're empty you out, find the matchup that they like. And then, when you try and get up in them, they're going to be able to check up on the outside and they're going to get vertical from the slot with all that real estate to work. And we saw it over and over again in that game. So schematically it was kind of fun to watch what they were doing, but, the quarterback, I was talking to a former GM out here at practice today, and we had a great conversation about Burrow. I said, look, you kind of wait for him to come back to earth the whole year. Like this,
Cinderella.
You can't keep this pace up. And he never did. He absolutely never did. And I like to talk to the old scouts. You know, we've got those guys, the old heads we used to go on the road with. And, you know, sometimes they can be a little quirky, right? A lot of times bad breath, another story entirely. Mm-hmm. But I do like to talk to them about some of the older players that we weren't old enough to have scouted. And when you're watching the way that, that Burrow plays, he doesn't wow you with his arm strength, but just the instincts, the feel, the touch, the accuracy, the poise. I said, you know, did you scout Montana and what were the similarities there? Do you see that in him? And Buck, both guys said it's eerie. It's eerie how similar he is to Joe. He said, you know, everybody's compared him to Brady in terms of, you know, I think he both worked with Tom House. Mechanically, there's a lot of stuff similar there. Mm-hmm. But the way he moves around, he says, a lot more like Joe Montana. And I realize this is, you know, we're talking about, you know, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. Both those guys, that's the debate, right? Montana and Brady. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how to argue with him with what you've seen, the way he's played.
You know, the funny thing, though, when you talk about both guys were drafted out of the first round. So yeah. when we talk about that, it – I don't know. It's just interesting. Joe Montana was a third-round pick. Tom Brady, obviously, a sixth-round pick. Both of those guys obviously outplayed it. Both of those guys Tom Brady will be a gold jacket guy. Joe Montana already is. And so to try and figure out, because you do kind of wait, because it is a bit of a Cinderella story, right? We can acknowledge that, he got hot at the end of last season, played better. But the difference, I mean, the significant increases in touchdowns, completion percentage, all of those things. I don't know if we've ever seen anyone have this dramatic of a jump. And I think maybe it's the old scout in me that it just makes me nervous on a few different things. Like, what led him to pop? Was it scheme dependent? Was it supporting cast growing up? Was it his own personal development? Because Joe Burrow is 23 years old. Joe Burrow is older than Lamar Jackson. So he is a more mature player at the collegiate level than we're normally used to seeing. And how much of this, when it comes to like his comfort level in this scheme, how much of that can be replicated, particularly if you're talking about the Cincinnati Bengals taking him at number one? Can they take this offense, Zach Taylor, get on the phone with Joe Brady and say, hey, just give me everything that you guys did. I'm basically just going to call this offense like you called it for him. Or is Joe Burrow a player that can play outside of that system and still have the same kind of impact? I think it's one of those debates that, theoretically, as a scout, that we always will have because, man, you keep waiting. But, look, everything that he's done this year, he grades out at an A level. So how do you take that versus his complete and entire body of work?
So here's how I would explain it. I'm going to use two different sport references here. We love to cross over here. So if I gave Nolan Ryan a baseball and he had no knowledge of the batter, right, he has the stuff that he would probably mow the guy down, no problem, right? If I gave Greg Maddux, put him on the hill, and gave him no knowledge of the batter, Greg Maddux might get hit around a little bit. But when you arm Greg Maddux, his best asset is his ability to know what he wants to do, know what they can't do, and execute. So the way I explained Joe Burrow last year, Joe Burrow got there in 2 days. So Joe Burrow didn't have first of all, it wasn't a very friendly offense, but he didn't have a chance to become a master of his craft in that system. When he had a chance to study the same system, master it, know the answers that you have within the system, he operates and processes at such a rare elite level that he's successful. Now, Greg Maddux and Nolan Ryan are both Hall of Famers, Buck. They do it differently.
Yep.
And I think that's what he is. To me, he's Greg Maddux. Now, the other comparison, I was talking to a scout about this who has some hockey connections and had got to become friends with Wayne Gretzky. And he said Gretzky told him one time, was great. He said Gretzky said Joe Montana was his favorite football player of all time because he felt he was like him. And he said, you know, at the NHL All-Star Games, I never would participate in like the fastest skater or the hardest shot, you know, all the different games, you know, the basically their version of the dunk contest, right? He said, because I was never the fastest. I was never the strongest. But I can tell you one thing. If it's in the third period and we need two goals, I'm going to get them. And he said, like, that's the all-time great. Greg Maddux, all-time great. Tom Brady, all-time great. Buck, they're not going to wow you with their stuff, you know, with their physical skills, but there's something you cannot deny. And you know, I was like you, and you know, we've got a process to go here, but when I see elite accuracy, elite pocket movement, elite processing, you know, at some point in time you say, okay, he does not have a huge arm. It does not matter. It doesn't matter. He's going to beat you because he's got all the other stuff off the charts.
Yeah, look, I don't want to be dismissive about Joe Burrow, because I do believe Joe Burrow is an upper level talent. I do believe what he's done this year is remarkable. The way he dealt in that game against Clemson, to me, I think he showed a lot more than he had shown this year, because I would say that for most of the year, it had been very, very easy for him. This is the first time that we saw LSU behind significantly. We saw them playing against the defending national champions. We saw where it was kind of stacked up against him, and somewhere in there where he was able to settle it down in the second quarter, and they started carving up the Clemson defense. And he made a ton of plays. I mean, he made a ton of plays inside, outside the pocket. He made plays on quarterback runs. He kind of showed the full repertoire. And I think what he did is those detractors who were hanging out there, like, I think he made a very, very convincing case that, look, you have to list him as the number one quarterback, regardless of what you may think about his overall talent, because the way that he played the game, I don't know how you can turn on the tape this year and point out a weakness that wouldn't make him the number one guy at the position. I don't think we'll be able to find that tape. And so it's just interesting. And I think what the next part of the evaluation has to move to is, if I'm the Cincinnati Bengals and I take him, now what? How do we build it where he can be successful? Because everyone is going to want to see the Joe Burrow that we saw at LSU. How can Cincinnati make their team and their offense as close to what LSU was doing? How can they replicate the Tiger success?
All right, so let me do it this way, because we saw this is the McVay offense, right? We saw Jared Goff take that offense to a Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just play that game real quick. Jared Goff had a stronger arm. I think we'd both agree on that.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me another area of Jared Goff's game where he's better than Joe Burrow if we just take out arm strength.
Shoot, I don't know. I mean, you're talking about in essence the same guy. And with Jared Goff, I compare Jared Goff to Matt Ryan and those things. And I think
But do you think, because I don't think Jared Goff processes nearly as fast as Joe Burrow does.
No, I think Joe Burrow gets the ball out of his hands quick. I think some of the best stuff that he does is the anticipation and the reaction. Be able to see, hey, the blitz is coming. I got to get it out. I know I'm going to get drilled, but I'm going to get it out, and I'm going to get it to the playmaker. The touchdown that he threw to Thaddeus Moss, maybe the first touchdown, where they ran the swing and he did a snag. They had a free hitter come and hit him, and the ball is out. And the ball is out so fast that, like, Thaddeus Moss is in the end zone looking around like, who is around me? It was really an unbelievable play, and I think it's one of those plays that may go unnoticed. But when I saw that, I was like, man, how quick do you have to be able to go through your process to get to here's where the ball is going, and, hey, it's out right now. And to also display the courage and the toughness to not blink when you're looking down the barrel of a loaded gun.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's really, really impressive, you know. I mean, there's a lot – to like about him. And he also has what you and I have talked about, that not over my dead body mentality. He has just enough confidence and swag that you're like, oh, okay, and it's not too much. See, because I think there's a difference between Joe Burrow and Baker Mayfield. Like, I felt like Baker Mayfield's was a little too much, maybe a little overdone, whereas I feel like Joe Burrow's thing is a little – I don't know. Look, we're picking at personalities. But I believe he does have the swag and the edge that you need. And I also – I think you have to judge quarterbacks by the way their teammates respond to him. Every time that I've seen the TV cameras pan to Joe Burrow on the sideline after wins, I see guys who appear to genuinely like and celebrate his success. I didn't feel like when he is on stage and they have made it kind of like the Burrow show – I didn't feel like there was a level of envy. And I think that speaks volumes to how Joe Burrow has maybe made his teammates feel inclusive in the process as opposed to exclusive. And so those are the things that we are looking for when it comes to quarterback, because the franchise quarterback has so much on him. He's responsible for so much. He has to be a guy's guy, and I think Joe Burrow has that.
So answer me this then. I know we're on Burrow here for a little bit, but I think he deserves the conversation. We've talked to, it was Urban Meyer who said this, and we've talked to other people as well. But the importance of how you play on the big stage. Buck, that's been one of your calling cards. We've been talking about this for years.
It's the biggest thing. And so, like, that would be the first thing.
I mean, what do you say about that? Look what he did.
You can't say anything. You can't
say
anything.
Top 10 teams.
And that's what you have to stick on. Like, you have to trust that. Like, you have to trust, hey, look, man, we asked this guy to play a challenging schedule. He played 7 top teams. We asked him to play on the biggest stage in the playoffs. He's been responsible for, what, 14 touchdowns in 2 games? I mean.
Here's what I want to ask him. Can we just say, you know, we'll get a chance to talk to him as we go through the process. And he probably won't say this on air because it probably isn't the classy thing to do. But I would love to know, in his heart of hearts, if he wishes – that the Washington Redskins had the first overall pick so that he could go beat out Dwayne Haskins. I guarantee you I know the answer.
Oh, he definitely would want that challenge. I'm sure he definitely.
They messed that up the first time. I want to go fix it. You know, that to me is the way that guy feels, like the way that guy's wired.
Yeah, like he certainly feels like that. He certainly feels like he is that. But, you know, the funny thing is, like, I don't know, even when you talk to Urban about that, because there's going to be some conversation about the Dwayne Haskins, Joe Burrow thing and why wasn't Joe Burrow the starting quarterback and all that. And then I think Urban basically articulated
it. He said arm strength.
And he expressed about, look, Dwayne Haskins had a remarkable year, like a special dude, one of the greatest to ever play at Ohio State. Like, we can't really knock us for putting him out there.
The greatest Ohio State quarterback of all time.
Yeah, I mean, so you can't knock him. I do believe that is the thing. You know, what would have been even better than seeing him go against Clemson would have been seeing him play Ohio State.
Oh,
that was kind of the matchup that you wanted to see. not only because of his angle, but I would have loved to have seen how Ohio State would have, what they would have defended. Like, what do they know? What are the answers to the test that they have on him, and what dragons could he slay, knowing that they may know intel on him? I think your point, and I'm sure I will use it, the Greg Maddux thing is really interesting to me, being a baseball fan and, look, being around the Braves for so long. Obviously, growing up in North Carolina, the Braves were like the deal.
I was speaking your language.
Yeah, like the Greg Maddux thing is interesting because physically he wasn't intimidating, but from a skill standpoint, his skills allowed him to dominate. And what you're contending is, hey, man, skill and will over those physical traits, his skills are phenomenal when it comes to playing the position. His will, his desire, the ticker, the heart, he has all of that stuff. And we've been around enough to know that those guys have it. Because when we rattle off the guys that have been just in the last decade in our most recent generation, the guys that everyone reveres at the quarterback position, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, all of them have an edginess to them. And of those three, of those three, if we go back to our college evals, none of them did we rate as special arm talents.
No.
None of them. Like, now we have a perception that Aaron Rodgers is this special, magical thrower. But we, you and I saw him in college. We didn't view him in that same light. We viewed him as a first-round talent. I did. I think you did too. But we didn't see him as, like, the transcendent player that he has become. No, not at all.
Well, Buck, let me ask you this. Leading rusher in NFL history is Emmitt Smith. If you put Emmitt Smith in an athletic skills competition with running backs throughout the eras, he would finish nowhere near the top. Jerry Rice, the greatest receiver of all time. Jerry Rice, not going to blow you away with, you know, in shorts with the height, weight, speed. That's not him. Great. We're talking about the greatest of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is not like, I just feel like I'm coaching. I'm trying to coach myself, right? Which is, get over your hang up that this guy is not the 6 foot
it's
five,
hard, right?
240 pound hose, because that's what we've been trained, right?
It's hard. You
but
know,
at some point in time, you have to say, this is a results business. And this dude is a results guy. So there are, it's not like, like with Russell Wilson, it was hard because there's no 5 foot 10 quarterbacks
at the time. There weren't anything.
We're rattling off players in football, you know, baseball. I mean, shoot, you go Larry Bird, John Stockton. I'm sure there's a million other
Steph
guys,
Curry,
you know,
Steph Curry,
yeah, Steph Curry, there
Steph
you go.
Curry wasn't Steph the Curry. Fastest, not the biggest. He made himself into that because of the thing.
Thank you.
There is something to be said for skill development and the continuing ongoing skill development. And you and I have talked away from the podcast about, you want to trust the kid, and you want to trust the buy-in to the kid. And this is going to be a weird connection because physically they aren't the same. But I go back to the Pat Mahomes thing. When you and I sat in here and Pat Mahomes came in, and Pat Mahomes' impression that he left on us changed the way that we kind of viewed him as a player. Because looking at him on tape, we're like, man, he has all the skill sets, but I don't know. But we came away from that like, oh, not only is he smart and understands concepts beyond what we thought, but his drive was very, very apparent when we sat in these seats. His desire, how much he wanted it, and those things. And you and I have talked about, if I'm going to trust somebody, I got to trust someone that loves it. And I get the sense that Joe Burrow loves it. Now, I want to continue to ask that and see that or whatever. You hope that those things don't change with stardom and the like, but he appears to be a guy that loves it. I'll take my chances on those guys. The hardest thing for me to do in the process will be the Tua Joe Burrow thing because, and we can't do this, but you just wonder if both guys were healthy and if both guys finished the year, like, what does that evaluation look like? You know?
I think Tua is more talented as a thrower. I think there's more twitch to Tua. Like, Tua has got incredibly quick feet, quick release, quick mind, all that stuff. And I wrote down, when I did some more work on him a couple days ago, and I wrote down, he's a card dealer. He's like a blackjack dealer. You know, you watch those guys just throw the cards across the table. That's Tua. And you know what? I have to be careful because it's hard. We're not doctors, right? And trying to, when you're trying to sequence these guys and there's medical stuff, gosh, I hate it. I hated it with Jalen Smith. I hated it with Miles Jack. You don't know. I don't know. It's hard. Sometimes you factor it in, other times you don't. I just know that, man, the hip is scary, man.
It is. And also, in the world that we live in now, right, everyone wants to hold you to what you say and how you present the rankings and the grades.
Yeah.
And it's quite possible that both of these guys could be stars. Like, there's not a thing that says that, hey, both of these guys can't be stars at the next level. It could be very much a situation where they're like Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, you know?
Yeah.
Two guys that are really good players that play really well in their respective teams, and, hey, away they go. And so I just think it's an interesting evaluation. It's one of those that they will forever be tied together. And we'll just kind of see how it goes. I do want to talk, because we spent a lot of time on Joe Burrow. And so we're going to assume that Joe Burrow is going to be the number one pick in 2020. There's been a lot of assumptions about Trevor Lawrence being the number one pick in 2021 if he elects to come out at the end of his junior season. Quickly touch on, like, what did you think about his performance against LSU?
It's the first time that I've seen him really get rattled, I thought, you know, and I thought he was frustrated. You know, mechanically, he broke down a little bit. You know, I saw him overstriding, which the ball was kind of getting away from him a little bit. He threw a couple worm burners, which you don't ever mm-hmm. see from him.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll stand by this. I was actually texting with David Carr during the game. We were texting back and forth. And, you know, he was asking me about Lawrence. And I said, and I'll stand by it, and we'll see what happens over next year, Buck. Maybe this is one of those things you walk back. But I said, he's the most talented quarterback that I've seen. And I said, before Andrew Luck has been that guy for me since I started scouting. I've never had a higher grade on anybody than Andrew Luck with what he could do, how unique he was. I said, this kid's more explosive than Andrew Luck. He throws the ball, I would say, maybe a little bit more arm strength than Andrew Luck. They're both mm-hmm. elite, you know, mm-hmm. don't get me wrong. But then you add the intelligence, the character, all those boxes that Andrew Luck checked, you're going to get the same thing with him. But that was his probably the worst game that he's had. I mean, it is what it is. It's first loss in college.
No, you know, and what's great, and I think this weekend is really great for scouts and aspiring scouts. And I'll say this, a lot of times we as evaluators want to make snap decisions in a vacuum. We have a tendency to be very, really, really impacted by the last time that we see a player. It leaves an impression on us. When we know in theory you should evaluate the entire body of work. So mm-hmm. with Trevor Lawrence, I think we can confidently say, like, hey, this is a hiccup, one that he will learn from. You know, it's hard. The position that he's playing is the hardest position in the game. It's the one that receives the most attention and also the most criticism. Trevor Lawrence didn't have his A game, you know, but we still can recognize the talent and we can recognize the special qualities that he could bring to a team in the right situations. I said it about Trevor Lawrence to also go and talk about all the conversation that happened with Lamar Jackson on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. I just think it's really, really important that we're able to separate single game performances from body your work things. And while acknowledging, mm-hmm. hey, guys need to get better in this area, one game is not a damning indictment on whether a kid can play or not. And I think mm-hmm. as evaluators, as we continue to keep growing in the business, I just it's important to keep all of those things in perspective. For me, I'm excited to see Trevor Lawrence first game next year because I want to see, well, what is the bounce back? How does he respond to this game? How does it eat at him in the offseason? And how does it fuel him to take his game to the next level? I believe the Charger game in last year's playoffs affected Lamar Jackson to the point that he came back and he responded how? In an MVP mm-hmm. fashion. So as we're looking at these players, man, the response from critical errors, that's what I want to see. I live for those moments in the evaluation because I want to see how do people respond when they're at their quote-unquote lowest, because I think that literally gives you an indicator on how are they going to be able to handle all the pressures that come along with being a franchise quarterback at the highest level.
Well, we talked about it with Matt Rhule, new head coach of the Carolina Panthers. And remember Matt said mm-hmm. Football adversity, right?
Yep.
You know, he talked about guys that have had to change positions, guys that have been redshirted, guys that have had injuries, you know, whatever it happens. He wants to see how you respond to football adversity. Lamar Jackson, what a great example, Buck. You know, that playoff game against the Chargers, everybody was like, okay, well, figure this out. So, you know, here we go. The rest of the league's going to figure this thing out. And then he goes, rattles off 14-2. He's going to be the league MVP. Tells you a lot about him as a dude, how he responded to football adversity. This is Trevor Lawrence. That really first time, right? First time. Football adversity.
Yeah.
But I did not leave that game last night, Buck, going, oh boy, I'm off on him. He didn't play as well, but that dude is a freak talent.
Freak talent, big body playmaker, guy that can make all the throws. And look, DJ, it's probably better for him to take a loss in college before he got to the pros, because at least I have an indication of, hey, how he may respond. Imagine if he had gone unbeaten the entire way through and he comes to the end of his junior year. He's never lost. He's only lost one time in high school. How do mm-hmm. we know how he's going to handle adversity when it hit, when we haven't visual evidence of him having to overcome challenges or obstacles and those things. So in anything, this is a bit of a blessing in disguise for him. He gets an opportunity to come back and really write a great, quote unquote, comeback story coming off of the heels and the loss. Because you could tell his post game presser, it ate away of him that he was not able to deliver in customary fashion the way that he's always been able to do.
Yeah, I definitely think that coming into that game, LSU was a more confident team, you know. And I know Dabo is humble, so, but man, when you can see that even the interviews before the game, it was in just a matter of time. It felt like when you talk to LSU, like, they already had that game won. You know, there was a different level of confidence there with that group. It was a better team. You know, I think we both picked Clemson. I know I picked Clemson.
Yeah, I picked Clemson because I thought the experience was something. And when they came in and hit him with the haymaker, and it was 17-7, I was like, ooh. But the response. Yep. And I think also, like, we talk about those moments when you want to see quarterbacks and the football adversity. To me, the game last night against Clemson, to me, that's kind of the cherry on top of the Joe Burrow Sunday. Because it's the first time that I've seen his team rocked and having to take a standing eight count. And then they came back with a ferocious comeback. Speaks volumes about his toughness, his grit, his resiliency. That's what we're always looking for in the evaluation process. I don't want to see when it's perfect. Show me what it's like when it's broken. Can you fix it? And he was able to fix it.
I know you're a big MMA guy, Buck. It reminded me a little bit. Do you remember? Because John Jones was wrecking everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And then remember Gustafson took him into the deep water and they went five. And I think he might have hurt his toe or like.
Yeah.
All of a sudden everybody's like, okay, not only like the most skilled fighter, but like that dude's, he's got something in the tank. Like that was a gut check performance there.
Yeah.
Something to that.
Very, very much so. Like, we talk so much about, like, and look, the thing that we did with the team building podcast, and we were talking about culture and talking to all the different coaches and even pulling coaches outside of it because we talked to Tom Crean. The one thing that was the common denominator from everybody, toughness, mental and physical. The performance that we got from Joe Burrow last night, we saw mental and physical toughness because he took a pounding, but he still responded, and then he responded to the adversity. I mean, you just continue to keep checking off the boxes. That's exactly what you're supposed to do when you're an elite prospect, and he's done that.
All right, let's get to a couple other guys in that game. Jamar Chase, I thought, was probably the second best player on the football field outside of Burrow with what he did. Was
terrific.
We'll get a chance to dig into him next year. But in terms of like some of the guys that are draft eligible, Buck, I thought Isaiah Simmons. Oh man, talk about! Mm-hmm. I was texting with the GM last night, and he said this is what was the exact phrase I'm trying to say? You know what? I could even look it up on my phone, but it was like it's the new wave football player, man. Like that's what you have to have. That's
you have to have at least one.
He said, new age football is what he said. And that is, I was even thinking about it from a standpoint of, you know, we talk about the importance of, I mean, we'll get into this in a minute, but D-line quarterback play being the two big deals here. When you look at any level of football, those are you have a great D-line, a great quarterback, you're going to win a lot of football games. But I think as we see the game continue to grow and evolve, man, versatility and athleticism and explosiveness in a package like that. I see it, you know, doing the Charger games with a guy like Derwin James. This guy allows you to do so many different things. So what a special player.
Look, special player, special athlete. And I think, if anything, the playoffs have actually enhanced his stock in the draft. What he was able to do in the first game against Ohio State in the semifinals, where he basically played deep safety. I think that showed a level of versatility that maybe everyone didn't know that he had. And then his ability in the LSU game to just be all over the place and deliver in a variety of different ways. When we think about the top safeties or defensive playmakers in the league, and I think he'll probably be positioned as one of those safety types or whatever, look at what Derwin James has been able to do. Look at the way that the New York Jets deploy Jamal Adams, even though they have different games and body types. But think about Jamal being in the box, blitzing, being in coverage, doing those things. You have to have on every defense at least one elite-level Swiss Army knife-type player.
Yes.
And so when we think about building a team, because ideally you're building a team that can compete for champions for year on end, you have to have one guy that can do it. he certainly has that kind of athleticism, that kind of skills and versatility to be able to do a lot for a defense. It just comes down to the creativity of the defense coordinator when it comes to how do you deploy him, how do you utilize him.
No doubt. The other couple other guys jump into here. I'll give you a snapshot evaluation from what I saw watching the TV copy of that game, and then it goes along with what we've seen on the tape. Justin Jefferson, toughness, mm-hmm. ability to work in traffic. Mm-hmm. We've been beating the drum, right? Route runners, polished route runners with toughness. That's what plays in the NFL right now at receiver. Justin Jefferson, boom, check those boxes. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, to me, he's like a Ray Rice clone, a little bit shorter, but just he's so hard to tackle. He's great in the passing game. I think he's a classic second-round type back. You look at the corners, I thought was a rough one, though, man. Christian Fulton, I got to come down a little bit. I love the kid, but Buck, he's when you don't have a lot of juice and then you struggle to play the ball, that's a bad combination, and that mm-hmm. was his issue in that game. And then I also thought on the other side, A.J. Terrell, another player I liked, he had a tough time. So man, that was tough.
Yeah, he had a tough time. And I think with both of these games, it is a terrific game to watch cornerback play because, like, let's just think about how Okudah played those guys and how he matched up and how he was able to be in control and make plays, and it didn't look like they overwhelmed him. In fact, it looked like he imposed his will on the Clemson receivers in their semifinal matchup. And so when you're judging it on that kind of standard and that kind of skill, yeah, some of those concerns did show up, Fulton not being able to necessarily run and make plays on the ball. And ball skills are such an underrated quality when you come to the evaluation, like just being able to play the ball in the air,
yep.
whether you yep. intercept it, knock it down or whatever, but just being able to play the ball in the air, there's a value to that. And so many defensive backs struggle and panic at the moment of truth that when you do find someone who is able to do it, who's able to keep his man under control, who can have displayed the athleticism to run with the cathletes on the perimeter, man, it says a lot about him. And so, yeah, the ball skills were concerning when I looked at both of those guys playing.
No doubt. And the last one was, I don't know if you saw this, but I tweeted that Randy Moss's kid, Thaddeus Moss, gosh, he reminds me of like a little slimmer version of Jermaine Wiggins. You remember him?
Oh, Bad Body. Yeah, Bad Body was with us with the Carolina Panthers. Yeah. And it's one of those things, like the reason we call Jermaine Wiggins Bad Body is because if you ever saw him, like it's not the nicest body. It's definitely not.
It's a mudslide.
He's not a DK Metcalf type where you're like a body beautiful. He is a bad body. And I think sometimes he would go to weigh-ins with a bag of chips in his hand. Like, I mean, he just owned who he was. However, when it came to playing, man, that guy could make plays. He could get open. He could do some things. And Thaddeus Moss, the last half of the – man, he kind of made a name for himself, kind of got in the mix, and he catches the ball really naturally. And there's going to be something to him and what he is able to do at this level and the next level.
No doubt. He actually retweeted it and said and tagged Randy Moss. I forgot. Obviously, they played together in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So he was a fan. He took it as a compliment. So he liked the comparison.
That's pretty funny. That is pretty funny. Yeah, but no, it was really, really, really good comparison. And I think it's one of those things like, look, man, you're always looking for those kind of things. And you're looking for comparisons. You're looking for how a guy could project at the next level. And so it's terrific. I mean, a lot of talent on display. I'm very, very impressed with both teams. Really impressed with the skill players on LSU, man, because they make the game appear so easy for Joe Burrow. Their ability to not only just win at the line of scrimmage and make these big plays, but their ability to make these run and catch explosives, short passes, big gains, they can do all of that. But back to Burrow. I don't know if I've seen anybody who is as fearless as, man, you know what? If you're going to go one-on-one, I'm taking the shot. And yep. he lets it go because the 50-yard dime that he delivered to Ja'Marr Chase when he saw one-on-one coverage, I was like, whoa, like, that's crazy.
You know what's funny? The tell that he has, Buck. So we know with Breeze, when Breeze cocks his head up, right?
Yep.
You know, Breeze is getting ready to go down the field when he cocks his head up. With Joe Burrow, his front shoulder, he puts his front shoulder up, he drops his back shoulder, because to get the loft on the ball, he likes to kind of tilt his shoulders. And so you can tell, and there was probably a handful of times where you knew he wanted to go downfield so bad, and you see him tilt his shoulders, and then it's like, it's not there, I'll come away with it. But it's fascinating to watch him, because we talk about with a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL, it gets frustrating. Sometimes these guys are reading, low to high, and not this dude, man. He is going to read high to low. If there is ever an opportunity to take a shot, he is going to attack.
And I can appreciate that. And I also can appreciate, I believe, and this being a quarterback, the back shoulder throw is a hard throw. And in hearing
it Joe, makes it look easy.
Yeah, and hearing Joe Burrow say, look, if they're not looking back, I'm taking the shot. I am throwing it because I know they can't defend it. And his ability to consistently make that back shoulder throw, it's something that reminds me of Aaron Rodgers. And I would say this, Aaron Rodgers this year hasn't been the same. But if you go back to really when he was at his prime, when he's played at his best, the back shoulder throw has been the Packers' biggest weapon. If Joe Burrow can continue to have that in his bag, you talk about Greg Maddux being able to paint the corners, that is Joe Burrow's outside corner pitch. Like it's the one that hits the black for the strike, for the strikeout where the batter is kind of caught holding his bat.
Mm-hmm. That's been great. That's such a great call. And fortunately for Joe Burrow, he doesn't have to face Tony Gwynn. it's my only thing I got as a Padres fan. Tony Gwynn owned Greg Maddux. He's the only one to ever do anything against him. All right, Buck, let's go through these playoff teams real quick here. This is just a quick exercise.
Yeah.
Because we got four teams left, and we'll have a chance to talk a lot about this coming out of the games next week when we're together down in Mobile. But from a team-building standpoint, we did last year kind of our championship foundation. And it was a fun – I think we did this on PATH, too. We got to do that again. Let's do that again this year on PATH. Put some of these teams through this exercise. I think it's really a good look at these teams. But the formula, here it is. One quarterback – two pass rushers, could be anywhere on the D-line, just two pass rushers. Three offensive playmakers, combination of a tight end, receiver, running back, any way you want, but three offensive playmakers. Three defensive playmakers means non-defensive linemen, just three guys that can really impact plays from the linebacker and secondary total, and then three quality offensive linemen. That was kind of like, okay, man, you've got all that. You're in a pretty good spot. So why don't we run through these final four teams here and see where they are. You want to do it?
Yeah, let's do it. DJ, I'm going to say it because I did a little cheating. When we get down to it, it is really fascinating, and there's some stark contrast for some of these teams that are in the final four when it comes to the championship foundation based on how we look at it. Who you want to start with?
Well, let's go. You tell me. You start where you want to start with.
Okay, let's start in the NFC, and let's start with the San Francisco 49ers. And I kind of stretched it out a little bit with the defensive playmakers, but let's go. So quarterback check, Jimmy Garoppolo. Three offensive playmakers. I listed, and I mean, like, they had a couple different guys as you go, but I put George Kittle. I have Deebo Samuel listed as a playmaker. Yep. And then
that's right.
And then I'm torn because I think there are three other guys in the backfield that could be there, because you have Tevin Coleman, you have Mossert, and then you have the fullback.
Breida. Oh, yeah, Breida, too.
Yeah, Breida. So all of those guys kind of qualify for being able to be included in the category. So maybe if you make some of those, like, worth a half a point, they'll qualify. The old lineman, I had Joe Staley and I had McGlinchey. I don't know which of the interior guys would qualify, but it doesn't really matter.
Tomlinson's talented. I mean, he's a first-round pick for a reason, and he's been a good player there for them.
Yes, he has been in that system. He certainly has. Two pass rushers. I mean, Bosa, DeForest Buckner. I put an asterisk by D4 because you could throw him in there. Their defensive playmakers, Richard Sherman.
I mean, Buck,
Eric Armstead.
Armstead had 10 sacks.
Yeah,
so, I mean, they've got plenty of those.
I mean, so they have four pass rushers or whatever, and then three defensive playmakers, like however you want to slice it. I have Richard Sherman, I have Fred Warner, and then I know that Quan Alexander, prior to the injury, also made plays.
Yeah.
So if you tally it up, and I'm looking like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 guys that were included on that thing.
That's not even counting Emmanuel Sanders, who.
Right, who's another playmaker.
A really good player, yeah.
Okay, so now, like, was there anybody that you felt like I left off You said Emmanuel Sanders. No, but okay. So now when I go to the Green Bay Packers, like this is like kind of tricky for me, right? Because I have Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback. The three playmakers. I have two solids in terms of Aaron Jones and Davante Adams.
Yeah, big time guys. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know who the third guy is. Is that Jimmy Graham?
No, not for me.
Right, right. So I can't say that there's another one in there. I don't think Geronimo Allison is at that point. Marquez Valdez. So I'm kind of short on that. Then when
they need more firepower.
Then when I go to their offensive line, Bakhtiari, I have at left tackle.
Yeah, elite player.
Bulaga's always hurt, and I don't know if he plays at that level. Then you have Billy
Turner. Elton Jenkins is a good player.
Yeah, Elton Jenkins. Okay, so we can put him in there as a rookie. But then I look, Corey Lindsey, Billy Turner. I don't know. I'm not all the way. Yeah. So then I go to defense. Zadarius Smith. Zadarius Smith, Preston Smith, both of those guys have played really well. Kenny Clark has been a player that has been a dominant player on the inside. When I go to the defensive playmakers, though,
Alexander.
I have Jaire Alexander. I have Adrian Amos, but I don't feel as good.
I wouldn't put him in like the big playmaker status. You know?
So when I look at the Packers, they feel like a notch below what I sense from the San Francisco 49ers. Now, in the regular season, when they matched up, the San Francisco 49ers play like they have significantly better talent and pieces than the Green Bay Packers. What's your take on the Packers?
Yeah, Blake Martinez is a good player, but Blake Martinez is not Fred Warner. He is not Quan Alexander. Like, that's a different level. That's what I'm with you. I think they're a little bit light there. I think they probably need one more, you know, top shelf offensive lineman. I definitely think they need more firepower. They need another playmaker, you know, to go around the running back and the receiver. I don't put Jimmy Graham in that category.
No, he's not. So, he's not there. Like, and so you're being generous. And so when you're looking at it, like guys that we feel really good about, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They have 8. Yeah. We talked about the Niners having 15. The Packers have 8.
Yeah. There you go.
So,
all right, let's jump over to the AFC here.
Okay, so jump over to the AFC, and let's talk about the Tennessee Titans. And look, man, your tweet or your conversation talking about the Tennessee Titans being built like the early 2000 Patriots, I am in full agreement. Let's go to their team and the way they're constructed. Quarterback Ryan Tannehill led the league in passer rating, so he gets in there.
Yep.
Offensive playmakers, I have Derrick Henry. I have A.J. Brown. And after A.J. Brown, I'm kind of torn on who I should include in that category. Corey Davis has shown some flashes. Jonnu Smith has shown some flashes. But I don't
Adam
know
Humphrey
if they've –
healthy would probably be my next – I take that back. You know what? Jonnu Smith, the tight end. Jonnu Smith would be that guy. That's their third guy.
Yeah, so that is where I was torn. Like, hey, who's the third guy? Is it whatever? So we'll put Jonnu Smith. So Jonnu Smith qualifies. Offensive line play, Taylor Lewan really has been good for them.
Saffold.
I have Saffold in there. And then Conklin, I have in there because his first-round pick. He hasn't played to that level, but he's just been okay. Inside, they have Ben Jones and Nate Davis, you know?
Yeah, Ben Jones, good. Nate Davis, you know, you're excited about what he can become. I put them in the good category, but I wouldn't say – like three top shelf guys.
Right. So what they have is they have two in those. Pass rushers. Yep. It's funny, your interior lineman or whatever. Jarrell Casey, and I put Jeffrey Simmons in there right away because they have been a dominant defense since he has come back. Like since he joined the party, they've been really, really good.
Defense. Harold Landry, good rusher.
Yeah, Harold Landry has been really good. So we put him in there. So that gives them three guys that we can kind of throw in there. To make it happen. Defensive playmakers. I have Byard, and then I put Rashawn Evans.
Really good,
You know? Outside of that, they have some good players. Logan Ryan has been good. Kenny Vaccaro has been good.
Solid.
Adoree Jackson.
Adoree's up and down.
So they have good, not necessarily like
special.
Right. And so we tally them off, I mean, they're still qualified. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So yep. they're in there. And with the possibles, that pushes them to the 12 mark. The Kansas City Chiefs, and the Kansas City Chiefs are funny because they're a little more one-sided when it comes to where they're heavy. Quarterback, mm-hmm. check. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. This is interesting because the third playmaker, I kind of had a split between Sammy Watkins and Mecole Hardman. Mecole Hardman kind of gets it because of the punt return, kick return thing being he's dominant in that aspect. And he makes plays. Mm-hmm. He stepped in for Tyreek mm-hmm. Hill when Tyreek Hill wasn't there and was really, really solid. So he goes, I don't know what to put Sammy Watkins in, but I put a little asterisk by his name, like, because he could mm-hmm. be sometime. We've seen him flash.
I think I would rely more on Damian Williams than Sammy. You know, Sammy just, you know, it's just been injuries and production's just kind of inconsistent and all that. But okay. I think Damian Williams,
he's made plays.
Good player.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then lineman, Mitchell Schwartz, and then I put Eric Fisher. I'm not in love with Eric Fisher, okay. but you okay. know, but like eh. So that's the thing. So I have Schwartz, but like the tough thing, DJ, like when I look at the other stuff, I don't know if I love anything else on their offensive line. Like, yeah. you have Andrew Wiley, you have Austin Ryder, you have LDT.
LDT is a good. I would say I would put Schwartz and Duvernay-Tardif. I think would be their two best yeah, linemen, in my opinion.
Yeah. So you have.
Two and a half with Fisher.
Yeah.
Fisher. I've just seen. I'm ordered on that,
like,
because
like
I've seen Joey Bosa just annihilate him every time he plays against him. But
yeah, so then pass rushers, Chris Jones,
yes, Frank Clark, check.
But the defensive playmakers, I only have one. I have Honey Badger. Yeah. That's it. I couldn't find anybody else. And so
you've got like good, you know, Anthony Hitchens, good player. Kendall Fuller, good player, but I'm with you.
Like good, not quite.
So Buck, this exercise, great job putting that all together. It points to San Francisco, right?
I mean, it really points to San Francisco taking on the Tennessee Titans if we go by the rubric and the formula, because if we go by it, that's how it should match up in terms of like. How they do it. Yeah, so it points to the San Francisco 49ers should be the prohibitive favorite to win the Super Bowl. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, it doesn't mean that's going to happen. And the other thing, too, you got to look at is Pat Mahomes. I mean,
how many does he count? How many players does Pat Mahomes count for?
The best player at the most important position. And really, truthfully, if we stack them right, the way it was in order, you'd go quarterback and then two pass rushers. And I would put, if you're doing a 3-on-3 tournament, I would take the Chiefs, because I would take Mahomes, Chris Jones, and Frank Clark, and we run the court.
Ooh, 3-on-3. That is a good thing. If we were going 3-on-3 with a quarterback and two pass rushers in the tournament, which threesome would you take?
Ooh. Yep.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I'll take that. I'll take my chances.
You can be king of the court, NBA Jam. Just get them hot. Jeez, yep. That's a good one. I like that one. 3-on-3.
That was fun, man. I was going to touch on some of the guys I've seen out here at the East-West, but look, we've run a little bit long here, so let's save that for our next chat when we're together in Mobile. I kind of recap what I've seen here at the East-West, preview what we're looking at there at the Senior Bowl, and have some fun with that. But any other things you want to get to, Buck, before we get out of here?
No, that was great, man. I think I'll continue to build upon that foundation, because I think that is a great way to look at the team building scenarios. That is, ooh, that's, man, that is.
You know what's funny is that I'm doing this episode in my hotel room in Tampa, and I've got this little microphone attached to my phone, and I'm just walking around my hotel room while I'm doing this. I think I like walking around and podcasting at the same time. This guy, I figured out a way how to do this.
To let you in on a dirty little secret, when I was over in London and we were podcasting, I was doing the same thing. I was walking around the flat, just kind of walking and talking. Yeah, just kind of walking around and talking. I felt like I was doing a TED Talk. I was just going back and forth and doing all those things like with the mic. So yeah, like with the little AirPods and stuff that I had, like that's what I felt like. I'm just walking and talking.
True story. So I was, this is a couple years back, but I got offered a job in the league and was in the process trying to just sort out what was the right decision for me and my family. And so I had been, you know, on the phone with this team all day long, on the phone with, you know, I have a football agent that kind of handles the football thing. Then you've got your broadcasting agent that handles the broadcasting. So I've got these three different conversations kind of going on the whole day. And I think it was in, I was at the Senior Bowl. So it was a day off at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. And so I looked at my phone at the end of the day. I had walked close to 6 miles, Buck. I did not leave my hotel room.
Oh, man, you were really pacing it out.
Just pacing that thing out, man. I was like, this just shows you. You don't need to go to the gym to get a workout, man. Just walk around your hotel room.
I know. That's so funny. That's hilarious to you. That really
but
is
anyway,
funny.
Anyway, that's no. fun. I like little walk and talk here.
No, I think this is good, man. And I think as we continue to kind of stretch this stuff out and continue to think about team building, building the ultimate team, which is what every general manager and executive wants to do, I think there are different ways to look at it. But it is clear and apparent that you have to have high-end talent to be able to win in the league. And we're seeing from these four teams, it happens. We're seeing in the college game that you have to have premier dudes to win games. And all of these teams had premier dudes.
No doubt. Well, that was fun, man. It's great to catch up with you. Have fun at the NFLPA game. Both these games you can catch on NFL Network on Saturday. I think East West is up first, Buck.
East West is up first. I think you guys are rocking and rolling at 1 o'clock, and I think we follow at 7 o'clock Eastern time.
Okay, there you go. So be on the lookout for those two games. It is draft season. I love this time of year. It's a lot of fun. And if you're new to our podcast, trust me, this is the good time of year, man. We have a lot of fun during the regular season. I think we put out some good stuff, but hopefully we take our game to another level as we get to the spring.
Oh, for sure, man. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, thanks Nabil for producing, doing a great job back there. Mark Brady for pulling this whole thing together. Shout out to Jordan Palmer. We didn't get a chance to get to the soundbite, but we were going to give him some love because he came on the show in September and called his shot with Joe Burrow having a big year. So we like to give credit where credit's due. Jordan called that one. So we'll have a chance to talk to him about that as we go up to the draft process. But anyway, that's going to do it for us. Thank you guys so much for listening to Move the Sticks. We'll catch you next time.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.